am better than you because I overcame this and you're still in the trap. Like, if you make it out of the trap, if you do alive and you find recovery, you're no better than the person that's still sitting in there. There's no difference. We're all equal. We're all walking each other home.
So it was a tidbit from today's episode with Chantel Yule. Chantel is a content creator out of Saskatoon, Canada. Her and I were in the same part of the world when our lives went kind of awry or whatever. And since we found recovery, we've become quite strong allies in the recovery world. She's one of my favorite human beings. This is the second time she's come on the show, and I was so happy that she found the time to come back on. She's got a busy life these days. Throughout the episode, we have some laughs, as Chantel and I tend to do in our daily lives quite a bit whenever we're dealing with each other. There's a lot of craziness that goes back and forth. There's some really serious stuff as well covered. And as well, one of the things you're going to hear referenced in this episode is Mike Miller. Mike Miller is the owner at the Yatra Treatment Center, who also happens to be the title sponsor for this episode. He's been on the show a bunch of times now. We just finished a whole series on trauma therapy. Absolutely great work, guys. It's some of the work I'm most proud of. You can see that at hoapodcast.com/trauma. Also there, you can get the links to his website and learn more if it's something that you're interested in checking out, guys. They are absolutely one-of-a-kind facility. They're located here in Krabi, Thailand, where I reside. They know that where addiction is a smoke, trauma is a fire. So check them out, guys. Here's the show. Hello, everybody. Watchers, listeners, supporters of all kinds. Welcome to another episode of the Weekend Ramble on the Ashes to Awesome podcast. I'm your host, Chuck LaFlange, checking in from Krabi, Thailand. Joining me from halfway around the world in Calgary, Alberta, is my lovely co-host, Dr. Lisa. How are you doing today, Lisa?
I'm very, 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 very good. I had you're just talking offline about how you haven't slept in 24 hours. Well, I just had 12 hours of sleep as I seem to be making a habit.
This is how you started the last 3 weeks now. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I'm happy for you. Also joining us in virtual studio from Saskatoon, Canada, is a good friend of mine, a special guest, that's Chantel Hewell. How are you doing today, Chantel? Good. Why?
Right?
Right? No. It's
Saturday morning, 10:15. I'm usually not talking to anybody by 2 p.m.
So. Well,
I didn't brush my hair.
We're glad you made the time, right? I think, is this the first time you guys have met now, right, Lisa?
Yep.
Chantel? Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad we finally get to do that then. Yeah.
Me too.
So going into today, I mean, we don't even have a topic in hand, which, I mean, some of our best episodes have come out that way. If I go back over the week real quick, a couple things. Mike, of course, came in for Wednesday. He subbed in for Ryan. And we talked about 12-stepping in a way. Did you get a chance to watch that, Lisa? That episode yet?
I did.
How was that, hey? Isn't he just amazing. The most, right? Well-spoken, knowledgeable, you know, he's got all the things down there, right?
I have to interject into that my mom is very anal retentive.
Yes.
And so she had to go back and start the podcast at the beginning. She wouldn't watch episode because she hadn't watched the first time. And so she went back, and I even remember her calling me, and she's like, where's episode one? Because I think it starts at 6 because Chris has taken some stuff down. And so she recently this week watched episode one, which I think was Mike's first episode.
Second episode.
Okay. So anyway, she has listened to that episode more than once this week, and she wanted me to pass on that you should reshare that episode.
I should actually upload it. Forget. Actually, Chantel, you might be interested in that one. Trauma being kind of something that you touch base on quite a bit. It was all about my partner's trauma is ruining our relationship. And I to be honest, I titled it that not as an accusatory way, but just a kind of a clickbait way. Come and check this out. You know what I mean? Because I don't believe. I will. Just the way he articulates things. And of course, he's more trauma-informed than anybody on the planet. He really helped to explore how to navigate that situation. And really, at the end of the day, it comes from seek to understand, not to be understood. Right. And I think that statement, I just love that statement, right? That's a Ryanism on our show, but it's such a powerful thing. If we can take that attitude into every relationship and every conversation we have, just imagine what a different planet we'd live on. Right. I just said right twice again. Damn it. To the audience, we're not allowed to say right, apparently. I don't know, right? Or at least we're hyper aware of it.
Way too much.
I know, right. And I doubled up on it that time, too. So there you go.
I know. I feel like it needs to go with the head bob. It's not just the word anymore. Now we need right?
Like Fuck. Roxbury?
Oh, on the day the show devolved. Okay. Yeah. You know what? We could talk about trauma. I'd much rather do that when Mike is with us, but it's not that the three of us. Well, ooh. I'm looking for things. Nobody's offering anything. I'm spitballing ideas here. So, you know, see what sticks.
So I want
to. Yeah. Lisa, go ahead.
Yeah. Because I actually went back and was listening to the episode that you guys recorded this morning.
Who's Chantal and I, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
What number is it? You remember the one I mean, right?
142, maybe something like that. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My 1 year date, that one was. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But I didn't know that you guys, like, maybe didn't know each other, it sounds like, but you hung out in similar circles once upon a time.
We were a minute away from crossing paths, pretty much how that played out.
Wild.
Right? Yeah. Right.
His mom before. I didn't even meet his mom. I met his
knew her online. Mom. Yeah.
Yeah. Online before I met him. Yeah. He was in detox. I was just out on parole, and this woman started like following me and commenting on all of my stuff. And I even said in that episode, I was like, I'm kind of hesitant. Like what's going on here? My trauma.
Yeah.
And then I connected with her, and then all of a sudden he's messaging me. I have this podcast. I was like, fuck that. Like, I don't even think I answered you.
You didn't.
I don't think I answered you. No,
you accepted my friend request and then did not respond to me for like 6 months.
Because that's how I roll. I'm like, what are your intentions? What's really happening? I even talked it out with Dan. I was like, who is this guy? What are his intentions? What's going to happen to me? That's my trauma. That's my past. So then I kept talking to his mom, and then I couldn't figure out who's Chris and who's Chuck. The longest time,
and I could do a whole podcast with who's Chris and who's Chuck, right? But yeah.
And then he's like, "You're both me," and I was like, "Well, what the fuck?"
I know. Then the red flags around trust go off even more. Why does he have two names?
Which is actually kind of funny. I have three names. If you look at my, because it's LaFont. I went by LaFont for 40 years.
Yeah, he has three names.
Yeah, right. So I went by Chris LaFont for 40 years. And then when I got to Alberta and I didn't have any ID, do you know, Chantel, did I ever tell you about this? I think Lisa's aware of it. But here's a great example about how hard it is to come out of a life and back into just trying to get your shit together. So I leave Saskatchewan, keeping in mind, I was in Alberta most of my life, first half of my life anyway. Driver's license, jail, passport, all under LaFont. I get to Saskatchewan, driver's license, jail, passport, all under LaFont. So 40 years after I've been, because my mom, it was an assumed name from when she married my stepdad. I get back to Alberta. I'm like, okay, I need to get my license. You know, I go into the thing and I get my birth certificate, which has Hoarder on it, the name that I go by now, my birth certificate. And I go into the registry and I says, okay, I'm Chris LaFont. And I gave him all the same stuff that I've always used to get my ID. And they're like, this doesn't say LaFont. You're not LaFont. You're going to have to get Saskatchewan to call us and confirm that. I'm like, really? I'm going to get on the phone with Saskatchewan and convince them that I'm Chris LaFont to call you and verify that? What are you talking about? Right? Like, that's never going to happen. Yeah. A, I owe them a bunch of money. And B, like, what the fuck? So I ended up calling 311. Like, that situation went really bad. I ended up calling the provincial information line. And they said, well, you're going to have to do a legal name change. I've been homeless for almost 2 years. A legal name change is a trip to Mars. Like, do you understand how unattainable that is for me? I can't get a bank account. I can't get social services. I can't get anything without ID. And it's like, I just want to adult, right? Mm-hmm. Can somebody please? The easiest path for me was to go back to a name I hadn't used in 40 years. By far the easiest path was, and to start going by Hoarder. Yeah.
So right? Was Hoarder your dad's name?
Yes. Right. Yeah. So when my mom remarried, my stepdad never adopted us. She just gave us the name. But it used to be, it was called an assumed name change declaration. So you could go in front of a notary and get your name changed by saying, yes, I've been known by LaFont for 20 years, 10 years, whatever the number was. COVID, though, they got rid of that form because the fraudsters went crazy when everything went online.
Well, right? Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was crazy. People were taking identities left, right, and center. The assumed name change form just was like not a thing anymore. They couldn't do it. So they got rid of it. So there's no way to prove that that's who I am. So I had to go back to a name I hadn't used in 40 years.
So who Fortunately, are you really?
By blood, I'm Hoarder. By blood, and I never, mom never got a legal name change for us. So I am Chris Hoarder, technically, yes. Chris LaFont is who I've been known for as forever. And Chuckle Flange was just a name that came up in a crazy acid-fueled night one night back when we were like 18 years old. And I've since used it for all sorts of nefarious purposes. So when I started the podcast and wanted to remain anonymous, I just kind of went with Chuckle Flange. Right? And it's got a bit of ring to it for the whole, you know, voice personality, right? You know, Chuckle Flange, it's got a nice ring. So I've just kind of kept it now. I don't really care for it. I don't care to use it. Rarely do I. It's just for the purposes of the show. And I don't really care who knows who I am. So,
What were the thoughts in the early days of the podcast? Like, because you're only talking a year ago, right? We're not going back 20 years. Why were you wanting to be anonymous?
My stories were all crazy drug fueled. I was trying to be funny and tell some crazy. Oh, you've heard the stories, right? They were nuts back then, right? And I was trying to respect the people that were in the stories and keep their names anonymous as well. And when I found the why for Ashes to Awesome, that's when everything changed, right?
Yeah.
And then it didn't, by that point, the monster had been created. I didn't really, you know, I just kind of went with it. But now it went from trying to entertain people to trying to help people. And well, you know, so yeah, now I don't care if people know my name. Because
once you
know,
intention, your purpose changes, then everything changes, right?
Right.
Right. Right. Just have whiplash by the end of the show.
And I hope you get a neck crick. I hope that happens. I hope you're like, yeah.
Intentions and purpose as you heal and you work through your stuff are ever evolving.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah,
you might have many more names. No, I'm just, like, I identified as Pennywise this week. I didn't even know it. So.
Well, and your other alter ego, Captain Cooked, right? Captain there is that Cook? Too. Yeah.
Right? So it's so funny that you just said Pennywise. This is like a total aside irrelevant story, but I have to tell you, I have a 6-year-old daughter and I went to pick her up from school one day this week. And she's outside running around the school playground. And then she stops in the middle of the playground, looks at me, and she's like, Mom, is Pennywise the clown real?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's like, what are you talking about? So apparently some little boy at school has told her about Pennywise the clown. And now she's wanting me to verify if Pennywise is real or not. And I was just like, I'm not ready for this conversation. We're not going to talk about Pennywise the clown. Right? I'm going to go online. And find some happy clown and be like, that's Pennywise right there. Look at how happy Pennywise looks.
You're such a better human being than me. You are such a better human being than me. Because I would have been like, yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
I would have been the same. Yeah.
You say that until you're the parent at 3 o'clock in the morning who's getting called into the room because she's afraid.
With my grandkids.
Absolutely. Now. She would never walk past the storm drain again with the same attitude, like ever. Right.
No. But it's funny because I haven't thought of or heard about Pennywise the clown in many years. And now twice in the span of 4 days, I've heard two people bring up Pennywise. So there we go.
I can't. Why did I post that picture? Was it my sobriety date or something? The one that you made?
Something like that. Yeah.
I don't do my hair. I don't wear makeup. I don't do anything. I just, it's from here for me. So it doesn't matter what I look like because it's all about heart. So I did my makeup last weekend. Yeah, I was taking 65 months of recovery. Better be careful how I say that. And somebody made a comment that I look like Pennywise, and I was like, this is why I don't even do it. Yeah. And it's not even bad.
It's a good picture, right?
It's a good picture.
Yeah.
Like, I very rarely do anything with myself. And then just this wicked comment came on Trap House Testimonies, and I was like, I hope you have an amazing week.
Are people assholes? Like, right? Really?
We were talking about that before you came on, like some of the comments through our social media. It's like going into the battlefield of...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
put on your armor. But then
no kidding.
Hurt people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually, the reason that we did that last episode with Mike, I got to find that meme real quick while we're talking here. Or not meme, it's a screenshot that I took of a comment about the recovery community. And I don't know if you got a chance to read that. Heartbreaking that somebody feels this way. And I was left really disturbed.
Okay. Is that the one where you posted and said like something about we're not doing this right or we need to
yes,
do better?
Yeah,
or
yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And I just found it here now, so I'm going to read it to you. The sober community is by far the most toxic community I have ever seen, man. All of us have almost died and destroyed our lives to finally get off hard drugs, even if you're on subs or methadone, just to get completely put down about being a junkie in denial. What a shit show.
Can you send me that?
Yeah, I will. I will. Yeah.
I felt that to my core.
Right? Right?
I felt that to my, like,
it really, it sincerely, like, upset me that one person feels that way.
Those are the reasons I don't go to 12-step meetings. Those are the reasons I had to find a different way.
Yeah.
Because for myself, when I was in those spaces and those places, it was more toxic than actually being in the trap house in Regina.
Yeah.
There's so much judgment. There's so much shame. And it's like, why do I want to be around this? I don't want to be around this. I'll recover, like, however I do it.
Now, imagine that if one person said it, 1,000 person thought it, right? Like, we can all agree on that. How many people feel that shame? And in this day and age, don't go back to a meeting and end up going back out and not coming back, period. Right? And that to me is just, that's the heartbreaking part of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've got to do better than that. We just have to. So, and that's been my latest crusade in the comments, is attacking people that are propagating that shit. Mm-hmm. Right. And just beating people up for it. It's one thing to say, I need to be clean and sober for my recovery. Right. But you got no business telling anybody else. Right. You know, unless I come to you and I want you to be my sponsor, then your opinion very much matters, because this is not going to work if that's right. But until that point, stay the fuck out of anybody's recovery. Sorry for the language. Mm-hmm. Right. Sorry, mm-hmm. Lisa, I didn't mean to cut you off, but, you know, yeah.
That's okay. I was just going to say, like, you know, I see a lot of stigma when I'm at work amongst colleagues who don't get it. You know, people who don't understand addiction, don't have an interest in addiction, are not educated in addiction. And I've told the story before, but Chantel maybe hasn't heard it. But I remember being on labor and delivery as a medical resident or medical student or something. And a lady came in labor, and she was addicted to heroin. And the obstetrician who was on going to deliver her baby was like a 60-something-year-old Caucasian man, right? Yeah. And so he started like chirping and making these comments about, you know, her, and that, you know, I don't remember the exact language, but just tons of judgment and, you know, like, and you can imagine how this poor girl felt, right? Having to come in knowing full well how people are going to judge her. And so they were prepping her for a C-section, and him and I were sitting in a room just chatting. And I was like, you know, I actually have an interest in addiction medicine. And he was like, oh, really? And I said, like, do you realize that, like, the frontal lobe of her brain is not working? Like, it's like shut off. And he was like, oh, like, you know, I didn't really know that. And so we started talking, and I'm not kidding you, in 5 minutes of talking about what her drug use had caused in her brain in terms of areas that were shut off, areas that were overactivated. And in 5 minutes, there was such a huge shift in his view of her, his judgment of her. Like, it was so quick. And so I take any opportunity to, like, spout stuff like this to people at work. But I'm really curious, like, for both of you, like, where do you think this comes from, that people who've been there somehow feel like it's okay, it's helpful? I don't know what the hell they feel, but why do you think people who've lived it, like, because I see the people on the other side who maybe have no experience with it judging it, but what do you think kind of drives people who've been there to then pass judgment on other people?
Thank you. 100%. It is, without a doubt, it's ego.
I am better than you because I overcame this and you're still in the trap. Like, if you make it out of the trap, if you do alive, and you find recovery, you're no better than the person that's still sitting in there.
No.
There's no difference. We're all equal. We're all walking each other home. But there's so many divides in this world. It's, like, so ugly. Like, Chris and I were talking, or whatever your name is, I don't even know you anymore, before you came on. If I'm not sticking a needle in my arm today like I was a year ago, and I'm smoking weed now, Who the fuck are you to judge me for smoking weed? I don't smoke weed. Yep. I don't get along with weed. Never did. But, like, I don't, especially if you've been there. And I see it most from the people, my cat's somewhere doing freaky shit. Well, I'm trying to find her. I'll just hear her. But, like, you were there. You were once in those people's shoes.
Yeah.
Who are you to put shame and stigma and labels and judgment? Like, never forget where you come from.
No kidding, right? No kidding. I think I agree with you 100%. Ego is, in one way, shape, or form, the driver for that. I mean, it's always going to be, right? Whether it's an I'm better than you thing, or whether it's a need to validate your own experience, right? Which is, you know, and Mike spoke to this too, where if that's what it took for somebody to turn their life around, to be 100% completely chemical free and mind altering and all the terms, that's a passionate subject to them. And so you can, I don't think it comes from a place of malice. Ego is definitely a part of that. Maybe it just comes from this protecting what worked for me thing. You know what I mean? Because none of those groups were started with the intent on shaming people. Nobody went into that thinking that. And I think maybe it's outside of their awareness that what they're actually doing to people when they do it, right? I kind of like to give people more credit than that anyways, typically. Right? I think people are generally good. But there's another layer of it these days. And I hate to sound like that. You don't get it. These, you know, things were different now and all that. But they are. They're very, very different than they ever were before, right? 20 years ago, heroin was the worst thing ever. And it was bad. And people died. We've never experienced anything like we are experiencing outside of war and plague. We have never seen the kind of death that is happening now. And quite frankly, what worked for you when alcohol and coke and heroin were the thing, it might be irrelevant now, right? It just might be. And if the goal goes from clean and sober to saving lives, then all sorts of shit opens up to us, right? You know, right? Like,
completely. And they're only going to get worse.
Yeah. Can you imagine? They made fentanyl, then they made carfentanyl, then they started adding xylazine and benzos. And it was just like, how did you make, what brand of evil made the worst thing the world has ever seen worse? Right? Yeah. You know, like,
there'll be something new within the next few months.
It seems that way, doesn't it? Right? Like, it's that it happens that fast. Me personally, and it's something Mike and I spoke about as well. When I relapsed after 34 days, my first 34 days ever as an adult, and most of my teens at that, clean and sober, what stopped me from going back after like a day and a half was the idea of having to go back to zero and say that in front of everybody. So what was it? What could have been a day and a half, should have been a day and a half, turned out to be better part of a year in relapse, right? And that's not to blame that on the rooms. It's just to say that, and I'm a pretty confident, self-aware, all those things, whatever, don't give a shit guy. But if it affected me like that, that's just how sensitive and how easy it is to lose somebody back out there, right? So if you're going to start shaming people outright, right, you're going to start losing them real fast.
There's no real fast, room right? for shame in recovery.
No, there's not, no, right? There isn't.
Guilt,
there
I did isn't, something right. wrong. Shame, I am something wrong.
Right. Oh, I love that. I love that. That was something recent. I don't know where I saw that.
On my post, maybe?
Maybe it was. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And really, so. I think, you know, to me, to be sober and to be still so driven by ego, to me, tells me you still have a lot of work to do. You know, because if you see someone in active addiction, there's also so much ego, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, if you're sober and you're still so egotistical that you're judging and putting down other people, I'm like, dude, you're only halfway there. Like, the drugs are gone, but there's,
you still
there's
have the behaviors.
Yeah.
That you're using. Yeah, right. So you're clean, but dry drunk. Right?
Yeah.
And that's right. The self-work that one has to reflect on, like me. I have to work on me to not displace those behaviors or deflect them onto other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the chances are, if you don't want to do that self-work and the heart work, you're going to go back to using.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the reality. Very true.
Yeah, it is.
And I think, you know, like as a family member of somebody, like I've also had a bad experience, Chantel, like going to an Al-Anon meeting. You know, I went into an Al-Anon meeting once, and again, not to suggest that it would only be in an Al-Anon meeting that someone would experience something like this, but that's for me where I experienced it. And I may very well have gone to 10 other Al-Anon meetings the same day and not had this experience. But I still think when it happens, it should be talked about because it should be corrected. And I was sitting in an Al-Anon meeting in the same building where my brother was sitting a few floors up in a detox clinic, and my phone rang. And literally, like, the meeting stopped and everybody looked at me and they were like, do not answer that call. Like, do not answer him. And it was literally, the encouragement was to, like, I get obviously not enabling, but it wasn't that. It was like literally like to not answer him, to not speak to him. Now, granted, this was 20 something years ago. Like, would this still happen today? I hope not. But maybe.
Well, I think we've seen enough social media conversations to know that, yeah, it could. And
I went into an Al-Anon meeting and I introduced myself as an addict. Mm-hmm. And never went back. Looks could kill, I would be dead. But you know what? It's the reality of it is there's addicts who need to also go because they're in relationships with other addicts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But
right.
But their mindset and their frame of thinking is like, you leave and you do this and don't answer that phone call. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not a harm reduction approach. That's not like, at the end of the day, the addict's done. When the addict's done, it's not our choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't have to, the same thing. We don't have to shame them. We don't have to judge them. And just, my name is Chantel. I'm an addict. And then I was just like,
so what actually happened? Like, were they just being rude, or did they not?
It was the looks, and you know, you can feel the vibe, and energy speaks volumes in a room like that. Mm-hmm. And I just knew, so I stuck it out, but I never went back.
I just feel like anything that ends with "I never went back" matters, because it's just like
one person said it, 1,000 people thought it. Right. So how many people don't go back? I had an experience. Yeah. This one, I know you've heard me talk about this, Lisa. Back in Calgary, there's a woman that I interviewed for the podcast. It didn't work out because of tech issues. So I didn't end up airing the episode. But her husband, all the things, addict, you know, whatever, but horrible behaviors. Her friends had said to her, she had let him come back. Mm. They had been separated for some time, divorced for some time, actually, at this point, like years. So it wasn't a romantic thing, but he had nowhere to go. It's just, okay, you can come sleep on the couch. You're going to give another shot, whatever. Her friends and family, she had to hide that from her friends and family because they had all said to her, we will not continue speaking to you if you let him back into your life.
That's toxic behavior.
Isn't that horrible?
It is.
Right? Like just like, what? Right? This is a person that needs support more than anybody in the world. Right? And you're not doing that for their good. You're doing it because you don't want to deal with it. Right? Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what that is, you know? And the same goes, I've said this before, and I got a lot of flack when I said it, but I'll say it again. If somebody is left to their own devices and manages to come out of it, they did that in spite of you, not because of you. You know what I mean? Like, if you let somebody just out there and you cut them off and they get sober, that wasn't because of you. It was in spite of you.
Yeah.
Right? And you're allowed to protect yourself and your family and healthy boundaries and all those things. And it's up to you what you want to deal with in your life. I get it. So it's not even necessarily an accusation at anybody, but it is not because of you that they got sober.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because it does kind of perpetuate, you know, like then if they have a friend who has a loved one, if their loved one was lucky enough to get out of it, then I could see them being like, well, I just cut them off and they got better. That's what you should do.
That's what happens. That is 100% what happens.
Yeah.
Go into any of the family groups on Facebook and watch how fast that feeding frenzy starts.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I know.
Right.
You've seen it, Lisa,
right? Yeah.
I have for sure. And I think it's interesting, Chuck, because I don't know if Chantel has seen it, but there's been these groups that Chris is in, and you're very good at engaging and being very, like, even kind of keeled. But comments where people are rah, rah, cut people off, shut them out, and Chris even proposes the idea of love them, just love them. And Chris, like you said, there's times I've seen these conversations where you're explicit. Like, you're like, you can have boundaries. You can protect yourself. Loving somebody doesn't mean you're a doormat.
Exactly.
And he gets attacked. And like,
I'm the same type of thing. And then I was like, bro, can you go to that post? Like, back, you remember it? And it's, but people, same thing. Yeah, I've seen it.
It's
but
crazy,
the problem is, like, sometimes I see these conversations and part of me wants to, like, jump in because I'm like, I feel like Chris is getting beat up on or something. But the other part of me is like, you can't speak to stupid. And that sounds really terrible, but it's like there are some of these people you can just tell by the shit they're saying that it's like to shift them is going to take a lot more than a Facebook post or a Facebook comment.
Unless until it happens to them.
Yeah.
And then they might, and then they might get it.
Yeah.
Do you know, I shut down one the other day. Oh, I wish I could pull it up. I'm not going to, I'll just describe it. I really shut it down. It was a video of this woman, and it's called Don't Meth With America, I think is the page. It was horrible. And it's a video of this. She looks like she's in her 30s. She's probably in her 20s because of the way, you know, and saying things that just didn't make sense and whatever. And the video was made to laugh at her. And the entire, like the comment was just full of people laughing and carrying on. And I had to, you know, this is somebody's daughter. You know, her family's hearts are breaking right now. Right? Like, do fucking better. And somebody came on and said, who cares? So I went to his profile. There is a picture of him and his grandbaby, his baby, his granddaughter baby. He's holding her, just looking adorable. So I blurred out the grandbaby's face, put a picture up in the comment and said, if it was her, you'd care. End of conversation. Right? You know, end of conversation. Just like that. Right, you know, and that's what it takes. And Lisa, I'll speak to that. Like, you just know, and you can just tell. You talked about already that doctor, that 60-some-year-old doctor. It took you 5 minutes to turn him around. So maybe in these conversations, and you're right. Sometimes it's futile, but just maybe somebody reads it. Maybe it's not the person that you're arguing with. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe somebody reads it and says, "Fuck, he's right."
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I mean? And maybe it shifts the perspective of somebody somewhere, right?
And I feel like for some reason, those conversations, I've never had a conversation like that in person and felt like it had been a waste or had it been ineffective. But online, like, I just feel like people sit behind the safety of a computer screen with their anonymity and they blurt out like stupid stuff and nonsense. And I agree. Like, it is still worth being said because you don't know who's going to read it. Yeah. But it's just so hard. Like, social media is so hard. Like,
yeah, that's right. But hey, you know,
people that need to get healthy behind those keyboards.
Yeah, there is. Yeah,
they claim they are, but you can tell that they're not.
And Chantel, hurt people, right? This is one of yours. I mean, it's much bigger than you, but it's one of the ones that when I think it, you're the person I think of because he's, you know, in our last episode together. And I think we on this side of this whole issue, if you want to call it a side, and if you want to call it an issue, these people that are saying these things, it comes from somewhere. They are hurt as well. Right. You know, and even the people with the most malicious shit to say, right. And Chantel, in our episode too, you had talked about that, how great it is to have these positive relationships with people who you've had really bad experiences with in the past. Right. In our active days. Right. I mean, we have one mutual friend, for example, who you know what I'm talking about, the big guy there. But if it's the same thing, these people, they're hurting. And as pissed off as I want to get at them, I try to remind myself that, you know, on that side of it, it's the same thing, right? You know,
feels from that pain different. And everybody, like, it's not linear. There's no time frame to it. So you might be here and this person might be here and I might be way further ahead, but we're all still, the bigger picture is all the same for us. It's just how we get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Well said.
Yeah, right? I said that when I presented to Correctional Services of Canada. I'm sitting in a room full of ex-officers who are now upper management and parole officers. And I couldn't even breathe. There's 400 people in that room. And I stood up and I was like, I can't do this. And I had to message my prison elder. I was like, there's so much like power exertion, like abused power sitting in this room, and maybe five of them had helped me on my journey. I was like, I can't do this. And she's like, just get up there. So then I broke the ice. How hard is it for me to stand in front of you? Because really, half of them, the reality is, have abused power over me, have stripped me naked. I told Chris yesterday, he's like, what's new in your week? What's the topic? I was like, my asshole. Like, my asshole. Because I presented to two roomfuls of correctional officers and parole officers, right? But trying to tell them and have them understand the same thing, we're all human.
Yeah, yeah.
8 billion people in the world, we're all human. None of you sitting in this room are any better than me, but that's the same as people in recovery, right? But yep. People don't understand that because, yeah, ego. We're all just walking each other home.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Don't let your title or your status or your whatever.
Clean time or whatever, right? You know, yeah.
Just because you're a warden because you're one choice away from being in that iron cage. Reality is. Mm-hmm. You have a drink, you kill somebody, driving. Like, people are one choice away and they don't recognize that one choice, they could have a whole different life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I see that at work all the time, you know, and I've spoken about it many times. But I think people who grow up with a lot of privilege and have never personally experienced seeing somebody fall and just how different somebody, you know, and speaking specifically to addiction. But it's like, I'll see someone in Emerge who is really unwell, in active addiction. They're obviously not taking care of themselves. They're not eating. They might be living on the streets. And I know full well, because I've lived it in my family, that same person could have been in a suit, you know, dressed to the nines, clean, smelling good, all of those things just months ago. Yeah. But I think there's a lot of people, when you haven't seen a person that you know legitimately go from here to here, who don't believe that that's real, who look at them and that's them. You know, there's us and there's them. Yeah. And it's like, no, there isn't, you know?
There's so much of us and them, but it's not.
No.
People don't understand that.
If you look at the 15 years-ish that I was in Saskatchewan, when I got there, I was coming out of a shit situation in Calgary. I literally had a suitcase. My mom was like, you know, helping me buy groceries and whatever. Halfway through that journey, I'm flying to Mexico, Panama, Jamaica with the company because I'm management. Then I own 4 vape shops in 4 cities. You know, I'm sitting in the legislature. I'm having a meeting with Brad Wall and Dustin Duncan, the health minister at the time. 4 years later, I'm homeless, right? Like, there's peaks and valleys, guys, you know, right? Yeah, 4 years later, totally. 4 years later, 5 years later, I'm carrying fentanyl, even though I don't do it, just in case that's the day I want to kill myself. Like, that's, we are all, right? None of us are any better, right? You know, so.
And again, like, and, you know, I've seen people who were living good lives, who had good lives, who were very, like, had very privileged lives, who had trauma. And then subsequent to the trauma, ended up, you know, going from somebody who'd never smoked a joint to somebody who was in active addiction with hardcore illicit drugs because they had found some relief from that. But then, of course, you know, all the consequences start to pile up. And yeah, so it's so true. And I've had people say to me, like, I used to judge people for smoking weed. And now here I am, have lost everything. And literally can't control my use of some illicit drug. And it's like, I've seen people in legitimate shock going, how did I get here? Like, I was not one of those people. And it's just like, but like, there aren't those people. And any one of us, through any series of decisions, consequences, can end up in that very position. And people don't believe that until they see it or experience it or witness it firsthand.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know.
Ah, it gets me riled up. That one does. So.
I know. Chantel, I know that you talked about in the podcast that I was listening to this morning that you don't really talk about your story. So I'm not going to ask you about your story, but I'm just curious. So you're now like, what, 5 years sober? Is that right?
This month I'll be 5.5.
5.5, which is amazing. Yeah. Can you, like, would you share, like, a little bit about, because I don't know if you had tried recovery many times, or was it a never tried it and then tried it and got it, or, like, what was different about this time that you think you're now almost 5.5 years?
So, I mean, Chris knows this, Chuck knows this, that other guy knows this. For me, it was my last federal sentence. I woke up. It's in the podcast, but my daughter was my cellmate. I don't talk about my story. I don't share my story. I share bits and pieces of my recovery because I believe if I open Pandora's box again, then more is going to come. But I woke up and my daughter was my cellmate and she got charged for attempted murder. And then my mom died. There was a time lapse for me. So I thought, if I'm going to be out there living this life and I'm going to be getting high and I'm going to be committing crime and doing all of this stuff, when I decide to stop, time will be like exactly where I left it. And I was wrong. So I seen my mom on her deathbed. So many things happened in my favor that aren't coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence. There's a greater hand in my life, watching out for me. And I got to see my mom and there was nothing left of her and she didn't look the same. And she said, make me proud. Stop living your life this way. Like, promise me that you will do this. And she said that to my daughter because my daughter went to see her. And she said that to all of my kids. Not stop living your life this way, but make me proud. And those are the last words that all of us remember her saying. For me, I made a commitment to those words. And I remember them every day. So that's a part where Norma plays in my life. Chris's mom, my mom never got to see me do good because I was still incarcerated. So she didn't get to see the change. And Chris's mom always reminds me she does see it. You know, and then if you need a hug from a mom, like Norma's there for me, I can talk to her. I have many, many moms in recovery, moms stop the harm and other people's moms who have given of themselves to me. But it was that commitment to my mom. And then becoming my daughter's cellmate. I mean, I'm not supposed to be incarcerated with my child. I'm not supposed to role model that. I'm not supposed to be her co-accused. I'm not supposed to have a no contact order with my child. So just so many things happened that opened my eyes while I was incarcerated this last time. And the people that I had on my journey to help me inside weren't CSC. They were contracted to come in. So it was the chaplains, the elders, AA at the time. Not saying I was all about the meetings. I was about the people that would come in and volunteer their time and spend time with me. You're coming into my house and you want to hang out with me, you have something to teach me. And then I just surrounded myself and my support network got bigger and bigger. I talked about it on Facebook because I got parole 4 years ago this week. And the amount of support I have is not even just in this province. It's worldwide now.
Yeah, it is.
About it, right?
It, 100% it is, right?
Yeah, mine's worldwide. Yeah. You know,
Do you think that having had like some sober time, well, and I realize that there's a lot of drugs in jail, but you were in jail at the time. If you were sober being in jail, do you feel like having gone through those life experiences with your daughter, with your mom, while in a sober, clear-minded state, do you think that that made those things impact you more profoundly or differently?
So I was sober, and real crazy about my story is I spent more time in than I was supposed to because I still had charges in Saskatchewan. So I was a federal inmate in a provincial correctional center more than I was actually a federal inmate in a federal institution. So my programming had to stop and I'd had to restart it. And I would get upset at first, but then I truly believe that it was so that I could gain more time being sober in a safe space. Not saying healing is the best place to happen in an institution or in a penitentiary, but when you surround yourself with people that come in. So I gained more sobriety. I gained more healing along my journey. And it was just crazy how that panned out for me because I should have been out a year before I actually got out.
Mm.
But because of all of this stuff happening, it didn't happen. So now I see it as a gift from the creator that I got to strengthen my sobriety in there to make better choices. Then I transitioned to ETAs and UTAs from there, like going out into the community and doing stuff. And then I went up for parole, and then the next day it was world lockdown, so I couldn't get out. And I was like, yes. And they're like, you're crazy. I was like, no, I'm not. Like, keep me as long as you can, because the longer I stayed, the stronger I got.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah.
I'm never
makes my mind
that,
go
Chantel.
To mandated treatment.
Like, 28 days in treatment, sure, it's not enough. It's not enough.
No.
It's not enough at all. But the longer I stayed and the stronger I got after countless, I don't even know how many times I've been in and out and in and out and in and out. You get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And those two huge moments in my life, I needed to find a better way.
Yeah. And would you share, like, today, like, what are the things that you're doing today that help you maintain your sobriety? Like, what works for you?
So I work for an organization where community education is huge, and we have a recovery model and a healing model. It's called Straight Up 10,000 Little Steps to Healing, if you check out the website. Mm-hmm. So presenting in community and providing awareness and sharing bits and pieces of my story through a framework, that's healing. But I'm also in trauma therapy. I also have mentors. I am in the Leadership Saskatoon program. It's a 10-month program. I'm constantly on a journey of personal development. So, because I believe truly you can only bring a person along in their journey as far as you've been in your own journey. So I'm constantly developing and working on myself, which I really want to connect with Mike, because there's some stuff that I feel would be valuable by being in treatment, not going to Thailand. That's another trauma thing for me, but like engaging
but
maybe, some
but
of
maybe,
the therapies,
maybe.
Right. Yeah. Maybe one day. Engaging in some of the therapies that he has to offer. Because you get to a point with your therapist where when you know that you're just going and you're just venting or dumping and you're not doing personal work, that you have to find a different therapist. Because you want to dig deeper, right?
Well, and I think Lisa could definitely speak to her thoughts on Mike that way, right? I mean, as far as his value
Mike.
Is. Yeah, right. Did you ever get a chance, Chantel, to watch the series on trauma therapy with
I
Mike?
Watched some of it, and then I got really upset, and then I messaged you, and I was like, I got more work to do. Because I got really pissed off at one of the episodes, and and then I just logged off. You had me in the background watching.
Oh,
so you don't
okay.
remember that?
I don't.
I remember that you were watching, because I think you commented, because I remember, Chris, you saying something
on
Chantel's watching.
Okay.
Or
Yeah.
There was two that I watched. I can't remember, and I just got pissed off, and then I was like, I got more work to do.
Okay, so you weren't pissed off at the
you
content.
Were pissed off?
You...
Yeah.
Or was it something we
no,
said?
No, something upset me, and then I was like, if you're upset about this, then you need to look within yourself. Because the answers for everything, what I've come to learn, I mean... And I learned this with an amazing trauma therapist in the institution at Edmonton Institute for Women. I did group therapy in there too. And so he brought in these papers on a Saturday morning, and he's like, all right, you write down what's going on. What's the biggest like issue in the institution in your pod right now? And there were steps to it. And then what is the solution? So he would go around, he went around the circle, and all of these women are like, fuck this person and fuck that person, and the solution was that they better fucking shut the fuck up, or they better do this, or they better do that. And he got to me, and I was just laughing, and all I did was like, problem, I drew an arrow all the way to the solution, and I put me. And he's like, can you explain this? And I said, it doesn't matter what A, B, C, or D, or F are doing. Yeah. It's how I respond to it, and what am I going to do about it? I can let them, but at the end of the day, everything comes back to me. And a lot of people don't understand the importance of self-reflection moving forward in their healing journey. What part do I play in it? Right?
Yeah. I mean, realistically, if you can't look at yourself honestly, you're only going to get so far with therapy, and it's not far, sadly, not you far. Know,
yeah.
Like no. To me, the two biggest blocks to therapy, one is a person who's really well defended, right? So if there's a lot of defenses, you know, if you're doing a lot of things like projecting or minimizing or justifying or whatever, then it's really hard to actually do work, because you can think of every one of those defenses as like a wall this person has up in front of them. And then as a, you know, you're trying to penetrate through all of this, it's really, really difficult. And the other is when somebody doesn't have insight, or somebody's not willing to be honest about their stuff, you know? And like, we've all got stuff. Like, whether you've lived a life of active addiction, whether you've been in jail, committed crimes, been a victim, it doesn't matter. Like, we all have so much stuff that we can work on. And it really just kind of comes down to, do you know? Like, can you see it? And you don't have to have all the answers, obviously, but you have to be willing to, like, look at your stuff.
Coachable, if you will, for lack of a better term, right? You know? Yeah. You have to be teachable. Wow.
And again, it's ego, right? Makes you not be able to see your stuff? It's ego.
fucking ego, right? It's in everything. It's just, what did Ryan said, shame is like a wet blanket.
Yeah.
Ego is a wet blanket. The shit's on everything, right? Like, it's just, it's in the content creator world, I see it, and there's, I have seen, oh my Lord, some of the things that I've experienced is disgusting, really, for lack of a better term, that way.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not even that it's disgusting. That's not a right term. It's not the right term. It's off putting. And it's like, really? Like, you know, really? Is that where you're at? Right. And you're out there trying to be what? Okay. That's fine.
I'm messaging you about that one time. I was struggling with content creators, and I was like, what is happening here?
I remember at a treatment center that I know somebody who went to, and they used to use the term get off your ego, or you're on your ego, you know? And it was a program more geared towards young adults, but they had a lot of crazy rules. Like, you know, there was, I think, no baseball caps, no jewelry, because you'd have these like young guys in there from like Canada who looked like they thought they lived in the Bronx, you know? And you're like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, just take all this shit off. It was even things like you weren't allowed to sit in meetings like this.
But if you think about that and you compare it to the institutions of like CSC and corrections, one of the most humbling things, not federal, provincial, because federal you can have like your own stuff.
Okay.
Is you're all walking around in the same suits and you got nothing. And that humbles your ass really fast.
Yeah.
It humbles your ego really fast.
Yeah.
Comes down all of a sudden how much ramen you have is your, you know, your status, right? Instead of, you know, your dollar jeans, right?
I laugh every time I see ramen now.
Every time you get those clothes, you gotta show them your asshole first, so.
And there's that, right? Yeah.
That's humbling. So,
yeah.
No, it's actually dehumanizing. It's dehumanizing.
Yeah.
It is.
That's
fair. Yeah. Terrible. Yeah. It's
How would you, Chantel, because you know, we're talking about this a little bit before we started to record. And I mean, I'm guessing that they justify doing it, that they're trying to stop people bringing shit in.
But it still comes in.
Yeah.
There's that too.
Yeah.
But what,
and like, how would you do it differently? Like, how do we keep drugs out of the system and not dehumanize people?
It's half the time it doesn't even come in through somebody's butthole. It's coming in through the guards. It's coming in through tosses. It's coming in through the guards. It's coming in through the guards. I remember coming off of a transport, and the institution, Pine Grove, was on lockdown because they were doing searches with the dogs. And I think on that transport, there was 12 women coming from Regina to Pine Grove, from White Birch to Pine Grove. And so we had to stop immediately, and the corridor's locked down. Everything's locked off. Two sheriffs, 13 women, the dog handler. And you want to know where the dog sat? At one of the drivers that transported us from Regina to the institution. Oh, no, this can't be right. This can't be right. And I was like, holy fuck. Of course it's right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it also, to me, reminds me about things that you're taught, like, in medical school. Like, for example, like, if you're going to do an exam on a person, you leave the room and let them change.
Yes.
When you come into them and examine them, you talk through what you're going to do and you allow them to do the parts that they want to do. Like, you don't go in and, like, rip a woman's gown up and expose her, right? You ask her, can I get you to lift your gown? Like, we're taught to treat people like humans. And yet, isn't it interesting how in the judicial system, what you're describing that they're still doing is so the opposite. Does that mean that people who've committed crimes don't deserve to be treated like humans? Is that the underlying belief?
It's so crazy. If you think about it now, like the way you explain it in a medical, and then if I think about, so federal system's more humanizing than provincial. I'll say that because when you go provincial, I don't know how it is for guys. Well, I mean, I do because my partner's been through all of it. I mean, we make sick jokes now of everything, but provincial, you get everything, butt naked, in front of one guard, and it's like, flip your hair, open your mouth, stick out your tongue, behind your ears, lift your feet, spread your cheeks, bend over, and it's like, okay. Imagine doing that after sitting in RCMP cells in Regina for 15 days and getting your time as a woman. And not changing your clothes or having a shower for 15 days. And you have to be okay doing that. Knowing you fucking stink. Knowing you're bleeding. Knowing that they're going to make sick comments about you. But you have to do it or you get charged. So if you don't do this, you get in trouble again. Institutionally charged. Federal's different. When you go in, they say, what part do you want to take off first? Your top half or your bottom half? So at least when you go in federal, when they're searching the top part of your body, you have your pants on. When they're searching the bottom part of your body, you have your clothes on. But it's still, by the end of it, I mean, I was running through the doors from UTAs and I was like, woo! They're like, stop. Like, stop. Because you get so accustomed that if you want to go into community, you know you're coming home and you're getting searched.
Yeah.
So wow. I make jokes of it all the time now. Oh, you seen my asshole. How do I look with clothes on? Like, because it breaks the ice. Because you know what? It's probably just as traumatizing for them, if you think about it. They don't want to do it, but it's a part of their job. So some of them come in with the ego and us versus them mentality. And some of them come in and they're really trauma informed. So by the end of it, I was handpicking who was searching me because then I was okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. But it's interesting because I think too, if you treat people like animals and then you turn around and want them to behave not like animals, like yeah. It's just, it makes no sense, you know? And there was a patient that as a resident, I kind of joked about this. This is a girl who had like a low IQ. She could not live independently. She couldn't even live in facilities because she was so behavioral that in facilities with multiple staff and multiple other patients, it always led to problems.
Yep.
So she ended up hospitalized, I think, for close to 2 years. And they would actually send her from hospital to hospital in Calgary every so many months because she generated some burnout amongst staff. And as a resident, it was interesting, but we also have to go hospital to hospital and do rotations. And literally for the span of a year, her and I moved together. Like it was a big joke amongst all of the residents in the program because I would like move sites to start a new rotation and a week later she would arrive. And I was like, okay, we're just going to bounce around together. But what was so interesting to me was that there were sites. And I never actually was involved in her care. Like the staff I worked with were not her primary. There were sites where I literally saw staff speak to her through the door. Like they wouldn't open the door.
Yep.
They would stand outside the door and like it's like a caged animal and they would speak to her outside the door. I would go to another site where her medications were not changed. Nothing was different except the staff. And then there was a staff I remember at one of the sites who their daily assessments, he would take her outside with no security,
and they would walk laps around the hospital.
Yeah.
But it's just like, and she behaved better at those sites.
Yes.
So it's like, if you're going to treat her like a dog, don't be surprised if she acts like one. Yeah. If you're going to take her and treat her like a human and show her some respect and give her some dignity, well, lo and behold, you know, because the one that spoke to her through the glass had security standing next to him every time he was speaking to her. And then the one who would walk laps with her outside didn't even have security around. She didn't run away. She didn't do anything. So it's just, you know, again, like, I know nothing about the, you know, the prison system. But to me, it just clearly sounds like there's a lot.
Was she serving time?
No. Okay. She was a certified mental health patient, so she wasn't free to leave hospital. But no, there was no, you know, it was all about self-injury, you know, like she would do things to herself. Like even things like, this is a girl who would like crack metal forks and swallow them and cause herself to end up with like, you know, perforations in her abdomen and stuff like that, but not hurting other people as much. But it just makes me feel like there's obviously a lot of work that needs to be done in the judicial system. Because there are ways to do what needs to be done and still treat people as humans.
My dream is to get in there and be a lived experience voice in corrections, not in provincial, in federal. I always say, have you ever been in an iron cage? No. Why are you making choices about my life without me? Why? You have no idea what's behind the behavior. You have no idea what's behind any of it. You read what you read in those reports, and you just individuals on like face-to-face level.
No, totally. And why would you, why is your interest in the federal? Because you said the federal is actually better.
In the federal, because that's where my journey of healing started.
Gotcha.
And so many women in there don't have, and women only, because I believe healthy women help other women heal and find their voices. But because that's where it started for me, and that's where I found my voice, and that's where I faced so many traumas head on in there. And I know it's possible. I email my deputy warden once a month. We talk. I'm supposed to go hang out. She's going to shadow me instead of me shadowing her. So there are people who are open, but to change those systems from national headquarters down, it might not even happen in my lifetime, but if I can plant seeds to one person, only one, my work is like, I'm, you know?
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Ladies, we are over the hour mark. We could sit here and talk for a long time, but you know, we've gotten there. And as you know, Lisa, this is just the beginning of a very long stretch for me when it comes to the weekend wrap.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say it's midnight, and I'm not going to sleep until this is out and done. So, right? Yeah. Still got to get this edited. So, sorry.
Right.
Chantel, I want to thank you for coming on again. I've asked you, I don't even know how many times, schedules being what they are. You are always welcome to come on the show. Always. Be it on a weekend ramble or otherwise. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So, right? Fuck. Yeah. We have to get you on a games night. Maybe not, but on Black Ash Radio. I don't know if you'd really appreciate that one so much. But what I was thinking, Lisa, is we're gonna have to get you on as a game show host.
Oh gosh, some of those questions yesterday, like I watched a bit and I was just thinking to myself, like, so Chuck likes to say that I'm a muggle, right? Because I'm the
mugglest of the muggles.
Right? Like, haven't lived the life. Kind of a prude.
Do you know what she said to me last couple weeks ago? You're going to love this. I've never eaten ramen before. I was like, what? It's the most privileged thing I've ever heard. Turns out it was just...
It turns out I have. I just didn't realize Ichiban was ramen.
Yeah, my face is ramen. So I don't even know how I got a ramen face.
I don't remember how when it happened.
Can I have a new face?
It just happened.
I don't know this relationship between you two well enough to understand it, but Chris seems to love creating these memes with you.
There hasn't been one for a while.
I know. I've got other things happening, and I've been working more than ever, right? So
I think we had a lot of extra time on our hands at Christmas, and it got a little crazy. But now.
Maybe that's what happened.
We got stabilization.
You know what it is? It's just, it's on fucking treated ADHD. It's like focus on this for a while, and then I focus on that for a while, and then on to the next thing, right? So
yeah.
Without a doubt, I like to hyper focus, and for a while it was putting your face on dumb shit. So right, but rest assured, it'll happen again. I'm sure. Right? So
yeah. But yeah, so that game night last night, though, some of these questions, would you rather this or rather that? I was just
like, completely so far off. Like, okay, right? Like, yeah.
How many people said, oh, I've already done both.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Did you watch, Chantel? Were you watching that last night? Okay. No. Some of those questions were like, wild.
I was sleeping by 8 o'clock.
So. Yeah. So
good for you.
Anyway,
feels good.
That does bring us to my favorite part of the show, and that is the daily gratitudes. So, Chantel, let's start with you. What you got?
Just in the beginning, I'm grateful for my life. I'm grateful for another day. I am grateful to spend my Saturday morning with you guys, planting seeds, hopefully opening minds of others. And I'm just grateful that it's the weekend, because Monday's going to be a... another kick at the can.
Lisa, what you got for us today?
I'm grateful that the sun is shining. I'm grateful that I had a nice long sleep last night. I'm grateful, Chantel, to meet you. You know, I've seen all the memes, so it's nice to actually know the person or get to know the person. But, you know, for me too, like listening to your podcast, and that was actually a weekend ramble. I was away somewhere, and so I wasn't there. Yeah. But I did find myself, like, I listened to it this morning before we did this. And I just felt like everything that you were saying, I was just like, yes, yeah. And so it's just nice to get to actually meet you. And I love the way you think, and I love the way that you see the world, and I love the way that you see people, and I appreciate your insightfulness and your willingness. And so I loved listening to the other podcast you did. And I was, it's just so nice to get to actually meet you.
Yeah. That's nice. Myself, I'm grateful for great company on a Saturday night for me, now Sunday morning, of course. I speak a lot about you and the way you donate your time to the show. And I couldn't appreciate that more. And of course, Chantel, our relationship being what it is. I mean, there's a lot I love about you. There really is. I'm also grateful for air conditioning because it's so fucking hot here now, right? It's right now 29 degrees at 3 in the morning, right? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And it's just like during the day, 35 degrees is normal right now. It's just like summer just started. So it's hot. It's really hot here. What?
When does winter happen there?
It's not a thing, I think. It's really not a thing. So I guess I got here in the spring, late fall, or no, I would have got here late winter, early spring, I guess, right? Which I didn't realize, but yeah. So it's all messed up. There's dry, wet, and some other season, they call it. They don't really have the four seasons here per se, but
yeah,
it's just hot, right?
Just hot and hotter and hottest.
Yeah,
and...
fuck, it's so hot, right? It's so hot. I'm also thankful for Sunny. He just, this dog. He's here at my feet again now. He makes me so happy all the time, right? So,
aww.
Yeah, he just does, right? Like, even when he's just an asshole, right? I was thinking about... yesterday, I go to, like, there's always, like, I could probably see a gecko if I look around long enough right now. Like they're on the walls or everywhere here, right? It's just normal. And we love them because they eat bugs and they're good luck, right? So, but there's constantly, and they're just tiny, like 2 inches long, sometimes longer, but like most of the time, the ones in the house here are really small. And I go downstairs, I'm like, there's one missing a tail on its floor. And Sonny's just looking at it, just gunning it off, right? I'm like, oh man, did you do that? But it's a gecko. Their tails grow back, right? That's part, like, it just snaps right off, eh? So it's like, okay, it's no big deal. So I go to kind of like, I give it like a stomp next to it to get it to run. And it's trying, but its back legs are all.
Aww.
What am I going to do with this thing? I'm looking at Sonny, I'm like, you're such a dick. Like, you just put me in this position, man.
I'm surprised that, right. Sonny's doing this. Like, how is he catching them? Like, geckos are fast. Like,
Sonny is, like, really fast. Okay.
He's like a just ninja dog. Him.
He is the fastest, right? You know, I know he probably just lucked out. But so I had to put the thing out of its misery. And I was just so mad at him because I cracked a tear. And, right? I was like, I don't want to do this, right? It's like a bug. It's a gecko. He's got like a personality, right? Whatever. So aww. I had to put him out of his misery. I was really pissed off at Sunny, but then I was with Sunny. I can't stay mad at him for too long. So, and I'm thankful for living in a place where healthy food is cheaper than processed food. And it's just great. I've been on a health kick lately and not eating anything bad, anything. I've walked past all of the bad things. I've had nothing deep fried. I've had it's been so hard to do. I'm in 7-Eleven. I'm like, just get some sweet potatoes.
Right? Did so I not send all the chocolate and peanut butter that's waiting for?
I told you only send one or two because I'll binge it. Right?
There's more than one or two.
I would not appreciate 10 more than one because I'd eat it all at the same time anyway. So it's just, you know what I mean?
1,000 is never enough.
Right? Another bringing gem it back. from the rooms, right? So anyway, I'm also thankful to every single person who continues to watch, listen, comment, share, do all the things, you guys. We're growing and growing and growing. It's going really well. So anytime you do any one of these things, you're getting me a little bit closer to living my best life. My best life is to make a humble living, spreading the message. The message is this. If you're in active addiction right now, today could be that day. Today could be the day that you start a lifelong journey. Reach out to a friend, reach out to a family member, call into detox, go to a meeting, pray, go to church. I don't care. Do whatever it is you got to do to get that journey started because it is so much better than the alternative. And if you have a loved one who's suffering an addiction right now, you're just taking the time to listen to this conversation. If you just take one more minute out of your day and text that person, let them know they're loved. Use the words.
You are loved.
That little glimmer of hope just might be the thing that brings them back. Boop. There we go. Good job.